always locked on heat. Biscayne, South Beach, Goldberg and Ramil. Talking heat, body chill. Got the stats in the news. Got the facts and the views. Never know what they gon' say. Mailbag on a Monday. Pat Riles got the pack ride. Coach Spo got the know-how. Three bands in the raps now. Heat Nation, that's a packed house. Heat talk at the game time. Heat talk every day. I'm always locked on heat. Got it locked on heat. Always locked on heat. Keep it locked on heat. Seat geek for the cheek. What's the day got the heat?
And now, your locked on heat hopes. Wes Goldberg and David Ramil.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. My name is Wes Goldberg. I'm here as always with David Ramil.
After years of getting credentials and the inside access to locker rooms across the NBA, we're here to provide the most qualified inside information to all of our listeners, and we regularly provide that inside information via our mailbag, which we open up on a weekly basis, and we'll be doing that later on today.
Today's show is sponsored by my bookie. Before you decide who to bet on, you need to know and trust where you're betting. Go to mybookie.ag and use the promo code LOCKEDONNBA for a bonus on your deposit. So you mentioned the mailbag. We are going to talk about whether or not the Heat made a mistake by drafting Justice Winslow, and then we're going to come up with some Heat hybrid players based on players from the 30 years of Heat history. But first, we're going to talk about who really is to blame for this poor start. And this brings up to our first question. It comes from Brian Young. I know that the Heat's struggles are going to be placed on Hassan Whiteside because he's an easy target. He doesn't pass. He's a bad one-on-one defender. He gives lackluster effort. But something that never gets brought up is that the team's best players, Goran Dragic and James Johnson, are team captains, and Deion Waiters is the team's go-to scorer. Yet the criticism on them is near mute in comparison to what we put on Hassan. I'm not saying that Hassan has been perfect, because he's been far from it, but he's not the only or even the single biggest reason the team's been struggling. Other guys are in leadership positions or are just better players, and they're not performing. I think it's time that we start criticizing everybody. What do you think, David?
That is a lot to unpack there. There is so much that Brian incorporates into that one question. So I'm going to try my best to try and break it down so that we can look at the different aspects of Brian's question. So, you know, first of all, he's right that Hassan gets picked as the easy target. There are things about Hassan's game that we've been critical of the past, that I think a lot of Heat fans in general have been critical of, that even the team or the coaching staff is probably a little frustrated with on a regular basis, as evidence in the last, really bad loss to the Washington Wizards. But anyway, as far as Brian's question, he says that the team's best players are Goran Dragic and James Johnson, and that Deion is the team's go-to scorer. As far as Deion is concerned, that's probably right, although I think this is a team that's kind of built on scoring by committee. But as far as Goran and James Johnson are concerned, they are the team captains, but that's because of their overall leadership. I don't think it's because of the talent level.
Do you think that they still have to, as being in leadership positions, should they be, regardless if they're the best players, do you think that they should be criticized more? Is there a leadership problem with the Heat?
See, I that's what I don't think. I think we tend to equate best player as team leader, and that sometimes happens by default on the floor as far as if you have a go-to scorer. Most recently, I think Kevin Durant spoke about not wanting to be a leader. And on a team that has Steph Curry and Draymond Green, he's absolutely right. He doesn't have to be the leader. He probably accepted that role in Oklahoma City, although the emotional barometer for that team probably was Russell Westbrook. Even though he had off games, he was not nearly as consistent as Durant was. I think that Westbrook was probably the leader of the team. Draymond is the leader in Golden State. And I think in Miami, it can still be James Johnson and Goran Dragic. Hell, it's probably even falls somewhat to Udonis Haslem, who doesn't even play at all. So it has performance on the court has nothing to do with leadership necessarily off the court, if that's the aspect of leadership.
In this case, I think Goran Dragic is Miami's top leader. If there's a top leader, it sounds like Dragic is.
Yes.
I mean, he's
yes.
the guy that pulled James Johnson aside and told him to get his head out of his butt. He is Miami's best player. He is Miami's best overall player, most consistent player. He's their team's top scorer. And in this case, look, I get that this question comes from a frequent mailbag submitter. And I think as Brian is a frequent listener of this show, he understands that we criticize this on Whiteside a lot, and we do. And we probably do it to an extent so much that we just don't have room to criticize other players. I think Goran Dragic deserves some criticism for his lack of consistency on like a quarter-to-quarter basis. I think Dion Waiters deserves criticism for turning the ball over a whole bunch. James Johnson deserves criticism for having a really bad 3 or 4 game stretch there before he recently turned it around. Wayne Ellington deserves credit for missing shots. Josh Richardson deserves credit for being in a season-long slump after having a great preseason. Everybody on the team basically deserves criticism. I think you and I just go to Whiteside a lot because of what we see as his potential and what we see as just, I think you and I just have personal, maybe just annoyances with his game. That it's just not the way that if you and I were to build our perfect Heat player, which we are going to do later in the show, that player would lack a lot of Whiteside's annoyances.
And I think that's a really good point. And you bring up the potential aspect of it. And I think that's why he gets the bulk of the criticism. And I think it's well-deserved because he has that potential. Because he's probably, if not arguably, the most talented player on the Heat roster. You could say a lot about Johnson's versatility and, again, Goran's consistency overall. But I think Whiteside probably has the most talent. Maybe Justice Winslow could be up there. But as far as the ability to impact the game offensively, defensively, when they're fully engaged, when everything's firing on full cylinders, Whiteside's probably that yes. team's best player.
And he can be dominant in a way that nobody else on the team can be. And and the difference between Whiteside and I think why we criticize him so much and a guy like Goran Dragic or James Johnson, after Dragic or James Johnson have a bad game, they come out and say, I've had a bad game. I need to be better. These are the things that I need to improve on. Whiteside, if he has a bad game, he's just like, well, I don't know why coach didn't put me in longer. Or, I got all the hook shots I wanted. They just weren't falling. And it's just like it just seems like there is a denseness to him that is so frustrating where it's like, I don't know if you can get better. So you and I just yell at him from this podcast to try to get better. All right, we're going to talk about if Justice Winslow and Josh Richardson are busts, because that's our next question. But first, you know, we don't talk about gambling much on this podcast, but people still tend to ask for advice. Usually, it's what team to bet on. Do you have the Cavaliers or Pistons tonight, Miami or Charlotte? Well, let me tell you this. Before you decide on who to bet on, you need to know where you are betting. So that's why I always tell people, go to mybookie.ag. MyBookie has been in business for years, and their rep is rock solid. They do 100% cash bonuses, so off the bat, you're making money for doing nothing. And they have the fastest payout. Seriously, you get paid in just 2 days. You know who's going to win? Go bet on MyBookie. Lay down some cash. Win big today. I would only recommend a service to my listeners that's been good, and that's why I'm urging you to make your way to MyBookie. You win. They pay. Here's my favorite part. They have in-game live betting, which is how I still stay interested in the NFL playoffs and the Super Bowl, by the way. Get those halftime bets in. Also, they have the most rewarding player perks in the business and an all-new mobile site that makes wagering on the go a breeze, which I also did in last year's Super Bowl. Join now, and MyBookie will match your deposit with up to a 100% bonus. Use the promo code LOCKEDONNBA to activate the offer. Visit MyBookie.ag today and use the promo code LOCKEDONNBA. You play, you win, you get paid. Okay. This is our second question. It comes from Lyle Yahweh. Since people think Justice Winslow is a bust, Josh Richardson is then also a bust. With all of the hype coming into the season, he's shooting worse than Winslow, and in his first game against Washington, Winslow was outplaying him, and yet Winslow was benched during crunch time. I don't truly believe that they are busts, but at this point, I'd rather have taken my boy Kelly Oubre, who has made serious strides with his shot this season. Which one would you rather have, and do you think the Heat are using Winslow the right way? So a big, long question there, some things to talk about. I really think there's three parts here.
Sure.
Do we want to have the argument whether or not Justice Winslow and Josh Richardson is a bust? Because for me, I'd rather talk about Josh Richardson in this sense, that that's an interesting way to think about it. He's a second-round pick. Anything he does in the NBA, if he just makes a roster, it's gravy, right? But
right. Yeah, exactly. I think that's the point there is that, you know, Richardson, by being a second round pick, somebody who probably wasn't guaranteed a roster spot, has made a lot of that opportunity, and I think he's still what represents good value in the NBA.
I think Lyle makes a good point, though. I wouldn't use the word bust, but he did. There was so much hype to Josh Richardson coming into the season. He has been a disappointment so far. I mean, regardless of where he was selected in the draft, he has been disappointing during the regular season, right?
Right. I mean, tying into Brian's question earlier, he's certainly one of the players that we expected to take a leap. We expected that to be the case when the Heat rewarded him with a large extension. He looked good in the preseason. We thought that he was going to be a stellar shooter, much more aggressive driving to the hoop, as well as a stellar defender. The defense has been there mostly. The offense is not. And so I think he certainly deserves some criticism, which I think he's probably his biggest critic. And that a lot of that is just bad games turning into worse games, turning into a stretch of bad games, turning into a hole that he just can't seem to get out of.
The other part of that question, obviously, is, look, I don't believe that they're bust either. I think Josh Richardson, he's in a shooting slump. I don't know what... Maybe partly it's because his role kept changing. Maybe he wasn't prepared to step in as a starting small forward for Rodney Magruder. I thought he played really well coming off the bench during the preseason. I think that's a part of it. Kelly Oubre, by the way, was really good at the start of the season. And hasn't, as a starter, because he was replacing an injured Marcus Morris. But I always forget which Morris is on the Celtics and which is on Washington. But he went back to the bench and he hasn't been playing as well. It's almost the opposite of Josh Richardson, I think. But look, I love Oubre. Everybody knows that who's been listening to this show. I love Kelly Oubre. I think there's other players that Heat fans look at during that draft that maybe feel that the Heat should have taken above Winslow or instead of Winslow, and that's Devin Booker, obviously, who scores 70 points in a game for Phoenix. And then there's Miles Turner, who I knew you were really high on, and he was drafted by the Pacers, and he played really well against the Heat in that game.
I'm not sure if those are players that we could, you know, a lot of that, as far as whether or not these players would be better than Justice Winslow, is because of the fit that they currently have on their respective teams. I think, you know, we talked about this in a recent mailbag, that Devin Booker, you still aren't sure that he's a better value over Winslow. I kind of think he does represent a better value, because he would have gone the same kind of opportunity. Look, the knock on Booker, and it's probably well deserved, is that he's not a versatile player. He's a guy that just scores a lot, perhaps maybe a little bit like Andrew Wiggins, a guy that doesn't really impact the game in other ways. And when you look at Miami's makeup, that's probably fine. That would probably be a role where he could thrive in as the team's go-to scorer, and leaving it up to everybody else to provide some solid defense along the perimeter, you know, rim protection, et cetera. So his role here in Miami would probably translate into greater success, both for him personally and for the team. So in that sense, I think he would probably be a better fit for Miami than Winslow currently is.
You know, I remember saying that on a recent podcast, and I kind of was thinking about it afterwards, and you're probably right. If only just, yes, because of all those things, and also because Devin Booker right now on the trade market would have a lot more value than Justice Winslow. And when you look at it that way as well, you know, the Heat, if the Heat are looking for avenues to acquire a star player, having Devin Booker would be an avenue. You could trade Devin Booker to a team that is looking to maybe offload a more veteran star player and looking to kind of jumpstart a rebuild around somebody like Booker. Miles Turner as well, and I remember you saying this when we were covering that draft, that you weren't sure, you know, you were talking about Miles Turner as a possible Bosch replacement. Now, obviously, there was no way to know that obviously Bosch had started to deal with his issues, but there was no way to know that he would just be gone from the NBA at this point. And you mentioned Miles Turner as a possible replacement in case that happened. And I remember blowing you off as in, like, that's ridiculous. If Bosch is here, there's no room for Miles Turner. Now there's plenty of room for Miles Turner. I'd rather have Miles Turner than Hassan Whiteside at this point, just because of where the NBA is going. And he's also really good.
Yeah. And you know, that's the thing. You know, when he first came into the league, there were questions about whether or not he could handle the four spot. He was, I can't remember now, who was he starting alongside?
Who, Miles Turner?
Miles Turner. He wasn't the starting center.
Was it Ian Mahinmi?
It might have been. Hibbert wasn't there at that point. Oh, maybe he was. Maybe Hibbert was still there at that point. Yeah, maybe. I'm trying to – I can't remember exactly. But so he was starting at the four. Then Hibbert left, or Mahinmi went also in free agency, and then basically he became the team starting center. And, you know, we wouldn't have – if that was the case, if he was on the roster, he could have learned so much from Whiteside, and at the same time he would have wound up replacing Whiteside. We wouldn't have had committed the incredible amount of money that we have to Hassan Whiteside with a guy like Turner on there. So, I mean, so much of this is theoretical and kind of retracing history and seeing what might have happened if you had done something differently. But at the same time – you have to be able to prognosticate and anticipate what's going to happen when you build a team. It's all about, I'll never forget, and maybe it's a hokey example, but it was in the mid-90s when Orlando made a huge trade when they had the first pick in the draft and they selected Chris Webber, and they wound up trading him to Golden State for Anthony Hardaway and a number of top draft picks, knowing that Horace Grant was coming on free agency the following season. And that he was obviously disgruntled and tired of playing with Michael Jordan and not getting paid and the credit that he deserved for being a part of that championship, you know, trio. And they first saw that Grant was going to at least have some interest in signing with a young Shaquille O'Neal, a young Petty Hardaway. And he did. And they wound up forming this really incredible trio that wound up breaking up probably too soon. But that's the kind of foresight that general managers and front offices have to have. And I wonder if Miami just seems to lack that at some points.
Yeah, I think with the Bosch thing, obviously, that's really hard to determine. And with Dwayne Wade leaving, they probably didn't realize that he'd be gone. You know, everybody, you would just assume Dwayne Wade is going to be there for the rest of his life. I mean, or for the rest of his career. Now, whether or not Pat Riley didn't want him, I don't think he had determined that during the 2014
draft. Then you anticipate that Wade is not going to be the kind of player that he has been throughout his career. Like the fact that there was already a year-long maintenance program.
I think they saw that Luol Deng was probably in the twilight of his career, that he just didn't have much left in the tank, right? Like, that's okay, why you draft Winslow. Winslow was supposed to go 4 to the Knicks, you know? Yes. So it was I don't think that they saw – maybe – and I think you're right. Maybe they didn't see Winslow sliding as far as they did, and they were prepared to take Devin Booker, which we believe that they were, right? If Winslow wasn't there, they were taking Devin Booker.
They told Booker that he'd be a great replacement for Wade.
Yes.
I mean, that's
– Yes.
That's pretty clear cut that they intended to select.
And so – but, you know, with Winslow sliding, maybe they just jumped on the opportunity and maybe just – they didn't think he'd be there. So they went off of what their favorite player was, which was Booker, the guy that they were prepared to take. And they said, we got to grab this guy while we can because he was supposed to go much higher. And if that's the case, I also think that's wrong. If that's what they did, they may have really liked Winslow a lot. I still like Winslow a lot. To go back to Lyle's question, I don't think that the Heat are using him the right way. I'm not breaking ground by saying that, even though I was probably the first one to say it. But he needs to be a point guard for them, and he's not. And Josh Richardson is handling the ball more than Winslow, and I think where Richardson has to be off the ball to try to get his shot going, and Winslow should be bringing the ball up when the two guys are on the court. One thing I will say, Winslow and James Johnson have been able to play pretty well together, and we didn't think that would be the case going into this season. But
why aren't they using Winslow more? I feel like nobody's asked Spolster this question.
We need to get one of these reporters. We got to get Ira Winderman back on the show and get him to ask Spolster or something, or Barry Jackson back on the show and get him to ask Spolster. Because I think you're right. I haven't seen it anywhere. I think it's just something that you and me and Heat Twitter. And I'm not saying that this is wrong. I think oftentimes people who watch the games as on TV can see things that reporters and people who are obviously involved with the team don't maybe see because they're so close. And I think it's pretty obvious that Winslow needs to be handling the ball more and Josh Richardson needs to be handling the ball less. And that seems fairly obvious. I think we're just ahead of them on this. I really do. I think that it has to come at some point. Because Winslow right now is just not being used.
Correct me if I'm wrong, and maybe this was all some kind of weird fever dream that I had at the start of the season, but Winslow was used as a backup point guard in the opening game of the season against the Orlando Magic,
yeah.
Did he not?
Yeah, okay. I'm going to go back and watch that game. I wonder if Spolstra saw something where he was just like, this isn't going to work.
But we see sporadically over the course of the game when he pulls down a rebound and he takes off in the open court, he's an excellent playmaker, yeah. And he gets most of his baskets, it seems, in transition.
Yes.
Because of his speed and his decision-making ability and his length over a defender running backwards on their heels there. He's really good at catching a defender off guard when he gets to the rim in the open court. And it seems like, he's deferring to other players, or other players are taking advantage of it. And then Richardson walks the ball up slowly, and that kills the fast break opportunity. I just don't understand. Wants to speed things up, and then all of a sudden he puts the slowdown on there. I don't understand it.
When I talked to Winslow after the preseason, before the regular season, he mentioned he liked to give the ball his energy. That's why he liked to handle the ball. And I think that's what Winslow needs. He just needs to bring the ball up. He needs to be in charge of it just to get the ball in his hands more. And I think if you do that, it energizes him in such a way that he's better in even the catch-and-shoot situation. He's just better offensively after he's just held the ball for a little bit more and has given it his energy or whatever. And that sounds ridiculous, but I think it's true. Some players just need the rock to establish their own rhythm, and I think Winslow is one of those guys. Richardson, I don't think, is one of those guys. I think Richardson is really great in catch and shoot situations, and he hasn't really been afforded that opportunity. I think we've got to see it eventually. I have no idea what the answer to this question is. Why we haven't seen it? It's frustrating.
Would it make sense to start Winslow over Dragic and have him be like an elite level scorer off the bench?
So I thought that it might make more sense to start Dragic and Winslow and bring Deion Waiters off the bench, since he's only good for like the last 2 minutes of a quarter anyway.
Okay.
But I agree with you. I think that they need to maybe make that change and start Winslow as a guard, because right now he's starting at power forward. If you start maybe like Dragic, Winslow, Richardson, James Johnson, and Whiteside, that's a really long, good lineup maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, it's hard. I mean, so much of Deion's comfort level has been his dominance and his great performances last year and feeling wanted. I wonder if he'd take that the wrong way. But anyway, let's move on to our next question.
Well, our next question comes to – this is right into the Locked On Heat wheelhouse. We're going to form the ultimate Heat guard, center, and head coach. But first, you are listening to Locked On Heat. Locked On Heat still has some inventory for sponsorships left during this Heat season. This is a great, affordable way to connect and engage with Heat fans. Traditional advertising doesn't work the way it used to. If you've tried it, you know this. Podcast listeners are 65% more likely to connect with sponsors than from any other form of media. If you're interested or just want more information, no strings attached, email us directly at lockedonheat@gmail.com. Our rates are reasonable and based on listens. You could have your company right here on Locked On Heat. What are you waiting for?
You know, I was talking to our boss, David Locke, about those advertising opportunities, and it's just amazing because I think you listen to podcasts, especially not just ours, but if you listen to other ones and you hear these kinds of national brands advertising via podcasts, SeatGeek, Parker Wardley, all these different, companies that probably have a much more expansive reach. But when you think about it, across our network, we have like local businesses advertising and all these podcasts. And it's been such a great opportunity for those. I'm a little surprised that people in South Florida haven't realized what a golden opportunity is awaiting them.
Yeah, like a sports bar or a car dealership, if you're a real estate agent, this is the spot, right?
Absolutely.
All right, our next question and our last question comes from Alex Sanabia. Sanabia? We'll figure it out. If you could build the ultimate Heat guard, center, and head coach, what would it look like? You have to use previous Heat players and coaches in your hybrids. I love this question. So let's start.
We also had to build a caveat for our listeners that we couldn't have used LeBron James as either position. Typically, obviously, he doesn't play, either guard, center, or head coach, although he embodies aspects of all three.
Yeah.
But he was off limits for the purposes of this question.
We just couldn't take any parts of LeBron just because it would be so easy. I mean, I would just take LeBron James and make him my center. I'd be happy with that. That'd be fine.
And guard.
And my guard. And not my head coach, but if you're the Cavaliers, probably.
I lose your.
Gross. all right, let's start with guard. So I broke it down I broke this down by body, athleticism, shot, defense, and IQ.
Wow. Okay. Let me get that. You got me at a disadvantage, sir, because I had not done any of those things. Go ahead. What were the categories?
So, well, you don't have to do yours this way. I'm just telling you how I did mine. I'd love to hear how you actually don't do yours my way. You've done yours, I'm sure. But that's how I did it. So I wanted to. So, based on that outline, my guard would have the body of Glenn Rice. the athleticism of Dwayne Wade, the shot of Ray Allen, the defense of prime D Wade, and the IQ of Dwayne Wade. And the reason I went with all of those was because Glenn Rice was always, not only was he 6'7", he was very healthy. I could have gone with Dwayne Wade's body, but he obviously has a great frame. He's got a long reach. He's super athletic, but those knees, man. If I could just replace those knees with a healthy player like Glenn Rice, I'd do that. So you put, and then you keep Dwayne Wade's athleticism, give him Ray Allen's shot. He's the greatest guard of all time. Right? Like, besides Michael Jordan, that obviously, but yeah.
I think he'd be probably better than Michael Jordan if he could shoot threes like Ray Allen.
That's true. He would be better than Michael Jordan. So who do you have for your guard?
You know, I've got a couple issues there because, you know, I don't think Glenn Rice has the kind of physique that you think he does. Like, he was always a little soft, I think.
No, you're right. I wanted to go for length. So what if instead of Glenn Rice, I just went Josh Richardson?
That's fair. That's got a lithe body that probably adapts well in today's league. You know, maybe a little undersized, can take the strain of getting knocked down 7 times and getting back up 8. I mean, that's why Wade's knees are the way they are. You know,
so. I mean, I'm putting these own rules on me. Why don't, instead of just doing this, I have Dwayne Wade's body with better knees. Like with Glenn Rice's knees. I'm sure he had great knees.
No, he didn't. Actually, he had knee tendonitis.
Oh, crap. You're right. I forgot about that.
Who had good knees? Wow, Ray Allen did. I mean,
Ray Allen's knees. Okay. I could do Ray Allen's body. Why didn't I think of that?
It was 39 and playing at a high level. Yeah, I see why not.
There we go. Ray Allen's body. Done. His 39-year-old body is good. All right. This is why we talk about these things. All right. Who's your guard?
I think I want to have Dwayne Wade's heart.
Yes.
Because I think there was a commitment there to excelling. Even now when it's become, you know, I don't know if stylish is the right word, but I think a lot of people tend to criticize him because he left and he's fallen off the map a little bit. But just the heart in the sense that he knew how to impact the game. He had the kind of will to kind of impose himself and make a significant impact at the end of games. And I think that is something that can't be taken away from him. And I will also say that his body, because of that 6'10" and 3/4 inch reach for somebody who's comfortably and you know, very favorably listed at 6'4", is amazing. That's why he's the top shot blocker for players 6'4" and under. Incredible, incredible physique. But you're right. I mean, Ray Allen's overall conditioning, and of course, his three-point shot makes him a really, really good candidate as well. So I incorporated that. But I also, to be honest with you, I really like Steve Smith's passing ability. I kind of wavered a little bit between Hardaway, who was a decent passer, and Steve Smith. I think Smith was a little bit creator and also a little bit longer. So I think he had better overall court vision. You know, very similar to another Michigan State guard, Magic Johnson, who was always the kind of guy that Smith patterned his game after. So I incorporated that as well. But I couldn't do it without Goran Dragic. I think his overall intelligence and mentality and approach to the game is what's needed there for a guy like that. To balance it all together, you have to have aggression. You have to have passion. But at the same time, you have to have a mind that can control all that together and tie it together. And I think Goran has that. And then, to be honest with you, I wanted to go with the courage. I wanted to – how about this? The testicular fortitude of Mario Chalmers.
Yes. We need to sprinkle Mario Chalmers in here.
I don't like using testicular fortitude and sprinkle at the same time. But, you know, that's your call.
Yes. We need a little – just that Mario Chalmers cockiness, that Mario Chalmers uber confidence, the edge. Irrational confidence, that edge, zero fear when approaching a game-winning shot. Just love it. Yeah. So, all right. I love it. We had to add Mario Chalmers in there. Center. We got to do center.
That's almost like an easy one, right?
Okay. What's your center if it's so easy?
To me, physically, the ideal position, the ideal body is not Alonzo Mourning. Mm-hmm. It's not Shaquille O'Neal. I honestly think it's Hassan Whiteside. I think Hassan Whiteside has the perfect length to be an impact player. He's got the strength and the length to change the game completely. And I think Hassan Whiteside has the perfect body for an NBA center.
So
unfortunately, he does not have the perfect mind or the perfect heart.
So I almost put Whiteside down for body. My problem is he's 7 feet tall and he's 265. I don't know why I limited myself on this, because nothing about this is realistic, because we're literally getting into a lab and and Frankensteining a player. I just don't see how athletic a player with his size could possibly be. I almost would rather have Alonzo Mourning's body, because he's 20 pounds lighter, more chiseled, probably better leg strength, and 2 inches shorter, which gives him a little bit lower of gravity. I feel like he could just be a little bit more mobile at the center position, and I kind of want that. But that said,
you know, it's funny.
Go ahead.
Alonzo, I don't think Alonzo could have played today's game.
The way he played. I wonder if
just
he would
his
have
body. Been... I mean, all of it. Obviously, he would have had to like work on his outside shot, which wasn't bad. Just not exactly part of an arsenal that he used very often. But just like he's not 6'10". Like I'm stood next to him. He's not 6'10".
What is he? It's 6'8"? 6'9"?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, he's not.
I think he could still play like that, though. Like, Draymond Green isn't 6'8".
Yeah, that's right. He's another one. You know, neither was Charles Barkley. Charles Barkley wasn't 6'6" either. So, I mean, that's the whole thing. It's like you can play above those heights that are listed there very generously. And you know, I mean, he just would have had to change his game. But go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead. Finish up your collaboration.
Well, I cut yours off. So you have Whiteside's body. What else do you have?
Yes. I had the 3-point shot and the brain of Chris Bosh.
Okay.
Like Chris Bosh, I think he was so intelligent, obviously. We loved his personality. We loved everything about him. Unfortunately, you know, he just had a body that broke down, and which is another reason why between his body and Alonzo's, not a lot of good options there. Shaquille O'Neal was a little too heavy. Also, I mean, I think Whiteside just physically is the best center in Heat history. But, you know, again, not intellectually, which is, you know, Chris Bosh's forte. Mm-hmm. And then that 3-point shooting also. And then, honestly, Alonzo Mourning's heart. We've talked about it so often. If you could just take Alonzo's attitude, his will to win, the will to sacrifice himself so completely and totally, or, you know, and put that in Whiteside's body, you'd have a Hall of Fame level player. Unfortunately, that's just not the case.
I agree with all of that. I almost would say, let's not discount Shaquille O'Neal's IQ as far as who we'd want to put in this Whiteside body. I agree with you that Chris Bosh is the better one. I think he's just a little bit more cerebral in his approach, which I think is really useful in today's NBA. But Shaq's just like, I think Shaq had like this blink sort of intelligence where he was just snap decisions were often the right decisions. And I think that was valuable. I would take Shaq's athleticism though. If you took Shaq's overall athleticism, his footwork, his foot speed, and put him even like 2006 Shaq, we don't need Lakers Shaq, just Miami Heat Shaq, and you put that in this Whiteside body with the Chris Bosh mind and Alonzo Mourning heart, that would be dangerous. I mean, that would be crazy, right? I mean, any center with Shaq's athleticism overall would be very elite. But
you brought up a good point, and his
passing ability. Yeah.
Yes, I was just gonna say that.
Okay.
Yeah, his incredible gift for finding the wide open cutter or a guy open at the 3-point lane. You look at that and you go, why can't Whiteside make the same kind of impact?
Jeez, Andre Drummond can average 3 assists a game. What are you doing, Whiteside? Figure it out. All of the blame just layered on top of Whiteside. All of it. Nobody else needs to be blamed. Nobody. All right. Head coach, this is going to be a little bit different. Obviously the body of Pat Riley. I'm just kidding. So I broke this down in a different way. You know what? But what do you? I want to hear what you got before I tell you my breakdown.
To me, it was very simple. I mean, to me, I think Pat Riley was the ultimate coach. His ability to make in-game adjustments, to have a feel for the pulse of a player, to be able to maximize their ability, to get them to, you know, as we've heard many times from players themselves, to put their heads through walls, to play their heart out for a guy like Riley, to be engaged and fully ready to play at the highest possible level. I think that's the thing with Riley that makes him such a great coach and ultimately a better coach than Eric Spoelstra or anybody else that he have had. But I also wanted to combine that with Spoelstra's long-term patience. And I think that's something that Riley lacked. You know, we know now that he burnt players out completely. He burnt his way out of organizations, whether it be Miami or New York or Los Angeles. His style just can't be applied for the long term. Players just don't respond to it after years and years and years of pushing themselves that way. It just takes its toll, you know, emotionally, mentally, physically. And that's the kind of thing that I think Spoelstra is better adjusted for that. He's a workhorse, a tireless workhorse also, and he expects the most out of his players. But I think he has a little bit long term vision there as far as knowing when to rest players and things like that. So maybe not as much as other coaches around the league, certainly not at the Popovichian level. But I think that's something that he's probably better developed at than Riley himself.
So some minor tweet. I agree with everything you said. And I think that's just what you're talking about, Eric Spoelstra, that just kind of falls under player development as well, or player development falls into that.
Sure.
And that's what I have written down. I want Spoelstra's just player development, just as his patience is a great word. He's very detail-oriented when it comes to the players and getting them better, where Riley was just like, give me stars, I'll coach stars, and I'll get them to play together. So I want everything that Pat Riley brings from a motivation and a leadership standpoint, I want that. Even though Spoelstra does a really good job of that. I mean, look, people didn't watch the NBA the way they watch the NBA now when Pat Riley was coaching, right? It wasn't an 82-game season necessarily where you were critiquing game to game to game. Spoelstra has his guys ready every single game. So I don't doubt that Pat Riley couldn't, but if he can't, I want Spoelstra's ability to do that. I want that game-to-game consistency that Spoelstra is able to bring, at least from an effort standpoint. And then I want Riley's in-game adjustments, but even more specifically, I want Stan Van Gundy's in-game television adjustments. Because those are my favorite SVG moments, when the TNT cameras catch him and he's telling his players to build a blanking wall, to form a blanking wall. I want more of that. I want that spice and that sizzle that SVG brings to the table, to the sideline. I want some of that. Riley is very cool. Spo is very collected. I want a little bit more sizzle from my head coach. I want a little bit. I want to wonder if my coach is going to get a technical on a game-to-game basis. That to me is fun. For my post-game interview ability, I don't want Pat Riley. Pat Riley gets so much credit for being a good media personality. He is awful. He talks to himself in circles and says zero things. I want Eric Spoelstra's postgame. I want Eric Spoelstra gives one of the best postgames, at least among Heat coaches. I want Stan Van Gundy on the sideline to just be a wild card. But after the game, I want Spo's intellectualness and thoughtfulness. So
I wonder how some of the other... I wonder how... I can't recall Alvin Gentry doing anything of note.
No.
Kevin Lockley. Ron Rothstein.
I take Ron Rothstein's accent. I get give me that Brooklyn just kind of swagger. I'll take that on my coach.
Okay. Okay. I could see that. Although Pat Riley from Schenectady, New York, he's got that same kind of blue collar mentality there.
That's true. But he doesn't have the accent, right? He just kind of.
He does not. He eliminated that in Los Angeles.
Is that true?
I think so.
Oh, okay, cool. So that's everything I think we got. I don't know. Did we want to add any Tony Fiorentino to our coach?
His wonderful use of cliches over and over again.
Mount Vernon. Got to get a little bit of Mount Vernon in our coach.
Off the launch pad.
Train him up in Mount Vernon. That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening. Thank you to my bookie for sponsoring this show. Use the promo code LOCKEDONNBA to get a bonus on your first deposit. You can send your mailbag questions in the future to lockedonheat@gmail.com. Tweet your questions and comments for our recaps using the hashtag AskLOHeat. Make sure to subscribe to the show to get podcasts automatically every day. Then go to iTunes, rate us, review us, say nice things about us. Theme song is by CeeLo Keys. Outro music is courtesy of Mojave Wild. We'll catch you next time. We got one more show this week. We won't be doing a recap of the Boston Celtics game, but we'll have a show next, or we'll have one more show for tomorrow before we go into the Thanksgiving holiday. Thanks for listening. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes.